Welcome to Toy Power. This is the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. Hi, I'm Trent, and it's great to have your company today for episode 57. This week on Toy Power, it's time for a movie review, and we jump straight back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe to look at Black Panther. And we'll round off the episode with our latest scores. Today, in the Toy Power studio, we have Darren.
Hello, everyone. Great to be with you again.
Frank.
Yellow.
And Ben.
G'day.
And we've probably all been out there now and checked out Black Panther once or multiple times, and it's doing really well at the box office. I don't know if we have box office numbers or anyone's got that front of mind.
I don't have an accurate number, but I heard it was getting close to a billion.
Yeah, that is awesome. That's
incredible.
That is great news and a really good prelude to Infinity War, which comes out next month. So
yeah, I think one of the fears with it leading into it was that people were going to go, I'll save my dollars for Infinity War, thanks. And it seems to have had quite the opposite effect on the movie. So
yeah, well, I had an email today from a guy at my work who obviously knows I'm a comic book fan and movie fan and toy fan and all that. And
however would he have guessed?
Yeah, that's right. And he said, this Black Panther film, do I need to kind of see that before Infinity War? And I said, yeah, you've seen all the others.
Yeah.
You've got to put this on the roster to watch. And I think that's a big factor now that people want the entire story.
The complete experience, yeah. I think even just based on the trailers we've seen for it, a lot of it seems to take place in Wakanda. And so it makes sense in terms of the timeline when they drop this movie. But we'll get into where it sort of sits and, how much Marvel background you need to know before you see the film.
But also, not to jump ahead too far, but I like this film for the sense that you could watch it, even though if you haven't watched all the other Marvel films, you could watch this film as a standalone and be like, yeah, that was wicked. It's a story contained in itself. You don't need to know the whole Marvel universe and storyline to enjoy this film. It's a really good standalone film, and it if there's never a Black Panther 2, which I hopefully there, that's untrue.
I think there's a good chance.
Exactly.
This film is fantastic for what it is. It starts and finishes. It's really, really good.
I agree with Ben. I think that was a huge thing that worked for the film, the fact that it was a self-contained story.
Yeah, well, Marvel, I guess, is very well known for their universe building. And I guess for me, I was surprised to see that it was so self-contained. Not to say, again, that's necessarily a bad thing. But and certainly from a critic's point of view, critics, I just like films to be their own thing and not necessarily have to rely on other things to make them a good film. But there was a bit of a connection. So obviously, there is Martin Freeman, whose character name escapes me for the moment, but he returns to kind of give it that bit of continuity.
Yeah, Everett K. Ross is the character, yeah. And so it's funny, people, and I totally agree. In watching it, I didn't feel like you needed to. I think we're just going to jump straight into it from the sounds of it. So we'll start off with some non-spoilery stuff first for those who haven't seen it. If you haven't, you must be one of the few people on the planet who hasn't seen it to this point. But, there was actually, you're right, it was a self-contained story. It didn't feel like you had to know, what's an Infinity Stone and who's that guy over there. Yes, there were some ties. Everett K. Ross, obviously also Andy Serkis with Claw. His character has appeared in at least one other movie, possibly two. I can't recall now. And, yeah, there was some pretty obvious ties with two characters having appeared in other films. But it worked as its own self-contained thing. So, with that said, we'll just go through some of the cast and we can sort of kick off some conversation. So, this is the 18th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is pretty incredible when you consider how many movies in that series. Directed by Ryan Coogler, with Chadwick Boseman as the title character, otherwise known as T'Challa. Killmonger/Eric Stevens, played by Michael B. Jordan. Nakia, played by Lupita Nyong'o, who was T'Challa's love interest. Aoki, played by Danai Gurira.
Which classically is Michonne from The Walking Dead.
Yes.
There's some things I want to talk about when we later on about her character in general.
Gotcha. All right. And then there was Shuri, probably most people's second favourite character from the film at this point. Letitia Wright. She was the tech genius who sort of helped Black Panther out. Everett K. Ross, as we've said, with Martin Freeman. Wakabi, played by Daniel Kaluuya. Which one was he again?
The guy that kind of kept getting more angry and angry that he didn't bring him the head of
Claw. Was he the guy from Get Out?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah, right. M'Baku, played by Winston Duke, probably another highlight of the film. Ramonda, played by Angela Bassett, basically T'Challa and Shuri's mother, and the queen, or queen mother of Wakanda. Zuri, played by Forrest Whitaker, who was the elder statesman of the tribe. And, of course, Ulysses Klaue, played by Andy Serkis. So, that's it, keeping this sort of spoiler-free as much as we can. We sort of talked about our overall impressions. Everyone seems pretty positive about it. For me, I think these films are... The key is, with any film, really, when you walk out of the cinema... You know in your gut, and yes, you can play things over in your mind and talk yourself in and out of canon, but when you walk out the cinema with a smile on your face and going, yeah, like that was a solid movie, and I'm sure if you thought about it long and hard enough, there's a few little things that don't make sense, but there was no major plot holes, no major, well, that doesn't make sense in the context of the film. I just thought it was an extremely solid outing overall.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Leading up to this film, it's one of those characters that I didn't know much of the history behind, and we'd only seen him in Captain America?
Civil War.
Yeah, so I've only seen him once, and sort of he just came out of nowhere, and here he is, and he's awesome, and he's, you know, hauling his own, and you know, it looked really cool. So when it, you know, the standalone movie was announced, I'm like, I want to see it. I can't wait to find out more about this character. And honestly, I walked out of the cinema feeling extremely satisfied. Like, now I know where this character comes from. I know his, you know, origin. I know his history. I know his people. I know why he wears the Black Panther suit. I know where his powers come from, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an extremely satisfying film for me that didn't otherwise know it much of anything about the comic book character's origin. So definitely that was a huge highlight in my books.
Mm. Yeah, it seemed like it had if you peel back the layers, it probably was, you know, more than the typical comic book fare or what you might come to expect from comic book fare. So there were some deeper messages contained within there, which I guess you can sort of debate and go through. There was sort of, I guess, the whole angle around, you know, oppression and what that meant to, I guess, you know, have the power to potentially have all this technology, and what are they going to do with that? And I guess
the power to help.
The power to help, and some of those moral choices, and without getting into spoilers, but just that, I guess, that dilemma. And some really, really quite beautiful moments between the characters, I think, as well. Like, for me, some of the performances were just, you know, Frank went through the cast list, but some tremendous talent in there. And I think the acting was just top-notch, really, really solid.
And honestly, as a movie guy, you just liked every character. There wasn't that one character you like, I don't like him. Mm. Even the villains and things you like, these are cool characters. So that's, you know, massive respect in that regard. So.
Yeah. Just to round out on the... some of the visuals were just absolutely outstanding. And I can sort of get a bit desensitized to kind of the action because, I'm, you know, I'm there and... You got to blow me away, right? Yeah. To get me to have an impact this day and age with all the cool things they can do. But just some of the sequences and the way they were choreographed were just done so beautifully. Moments of pure adventure, but also moments of real genuine suspense and intrigue. And I guess all the things you just really expect from a good film. It delivered on all those aspects. So I think there'd be a lot of people here that aren't fans of the genre that would really enjoy this film, you know, take a lot of the messages out of it, take a lot of the depth, but also be entertained.
Yeah, definitely. Darren?
I really, really enjoyed it. I thought that the performances were great, as other people said. The cinematography really wowed me over. You know, we talk a lot about action sequences and visual effects, but I just thought seeing Rwanda on the screen and how that was depicted and the cinematography around that really... You know, really made it almost feel like a character in its own right. I thought they did a great job of bringing that to life on the big screen, and that. So I was really, really impressed with that. You know, the sister was the breakout character for me.
Yep.
I mean, there's so many of them, but I really loved it. And like Ben said, I went into much like him. I went into this knowing very little. I saw just enough in Civil War to know I wanted to know more about this character, but felt I went into it knowing nothing as well. So for me, I think the timing of this film was great before he appears in Avengers, just to sort of give us that background. I think another film when we didn't know so much about him would have perhaps been problematic. So I think the timing was perfect. I really, really, really enjoyed it. Are we grading them at this point, or are we?
Oh, we can give like an overall sort of, you know, out of 10 type thing, what we think, and then we can sort of move into some spoilers. I think you touched on a really interesting point, Darren, when you said it's character driven, really. Like, it's, I think the biggest thing with it is it's really different from some of the other, a lot of the Marvel comic book films we've seen to date. Even just purely at face value, the lead character is not a white guy with superpowers, to put it bluntly. And look, it should be said, for those who don't know us and are just sort of maybe tuning in because they really love Black Panther, we're talking about this from the context of four very pale Australian guys. So
four white dudes.
Yeah, four white dudes, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, please forgive us. We're certainly not meaning to be culturally insensitive or anything. We're talking about it from our perspective, obviously aware of the sort of cultural significance this film has. Fun fact, Chadwick Boseman, anyone want to take a guess how old he is?
42.
Yeah, he's 41.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
He looks good for that
exactly.
age.
Exactly. Like, you look at Chris Evans and
found the fountain of youth.
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible. And I think his demeanor. He's not Thor, who wants to smash stuff. He's not Captain America, who, you know, wants to do what's right. He's not Iron Man, who, let's be honest, is a bit of a monster at times. He's calm. He's thoughtful.
Level-headed.
That's exactly the word. And he's just a good guy.
Everything that comes his way, any problem, any issue, he sort of takes a step back and lets it digest. And he goes to his friends and his family and he says, you know, what would you do?
Yep.
But overall, you know, puts the king hat on and says, right, I'm the king. This is what we're going to do. But he, you know, he goes to each of his people and sort of asks them and doesn't demean them by their answer. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very strategic in that way. And, you know, he treats everyone so well. It's just, you know.
He's really an ethical leader.
Yeah.
You know, there's an ethics to it.
That's the feel I got from the film, is, you know, I talked about before, how you just fall in love with all the characters. You appreciate them. You respect them. And it's that sort of, that writing and that, you know, this character and things. It's just, you know, you just appreciate them for what their choices are, and you know, that helps to follow the storyline through.
Yeah. All right, so scores out of 10. We might start with Darren, work our way around.
I struggled a bit with this one. I bounced around between 8 and 9. I'm going to say 8.5.
Yep. Trent?
I reckon I sat it, and look, I mark fairly harshly, so don't take that as a negative. I probably sat it around the 7.5 mark for me.
Yep.
I'd give it a solid 8. I'd only give it a higher grade if it had a bit more action. I think this film is an awesome adventure story with a little bit of action, but if it had a bit more action in it, it would have got a higher score from me.
Yeah, look, I'm probably going to go the probably about the 8 as well. I think perhaps not, and I don't want to say not being the target audience, but I think if I was coming from a cultural background where it spoke to me more, you'd probably go higher than that. And whilst I have an understanding of the themes that it's talking about, it's hard for that to resonate with me on a deeply personal level. So yeah, I'd still, I mean, people always talk about, oh, it's top five Marvel films and all this sort of stuff. I think that's really easy to say 2 minutes after walking out of the theater. I think a second view, I don't know if anyone here has seen it twice.
Not yet, no. But I'm hoping to really soon.
Yeah, I think a second, because once you get over the spectacle and the twists and turns of the plot, I think there's a lot to unpack in the themes and stuff that goes behind it. All right, so with that said, I think we go, unless anyone else got anything else to say, we'll move into spoiler town.
Let's do it.
All right. I'll put a sound effect in there at some point. Okay,
can it be Funky Town with you doing spoiler over the top? Won't you take me to a
Funky Town? Won't you take me to Spoiler Town? Is that right?
Pretty much. What I had in my head.
Just use that. Just copy and paste
done.
That.
I'll put a fat beat behind it.
Frank's rendition of Spoiler Town.
So look, I think as you said, it's hard to pick a favourite character or something along those lines. I think the one that had a lot of people talking about was Michael B. Jordan's portrayal of Killmonger, and
the shirt reveal.
Yes, the shirtless reveal, yep. and people are going, wow, you know, he's got a lot of acne, and the girls in the audience didn't really care. They're just like, no, I'm not seeing that.
It was a moment where I think I was horrified, you know, just because it meant it represented all the kills.
Yep.
And all the girls around me were just like ogling.
This is amazing.
Wow, I love this scene.
Yeah. Look, I think people are comparing him to Loki insofar as, you know, their favorite sort of villain of the MCU. For all the success the Marvel movies have had, the villains tend to be their weakest part, particularly when they get killed off in the end of every movie. Loki perhaps being the one exception to this. I'd put Killmonger right up there with that, insofar as you bought his rationale behind what he was doing. That he went about it a little heavy-handed, well, that's what ultimately makes him a villain. But in the same way that the Joker's sort of twisted sense of logic has a bit of logic to it, I thought Killmonger, you go, yeah, do you know what? I can sort of side with him. And along with Black Panther's mate, whose name escapes me, you know, same sort of thing. He went along to the point where he left T'Challa going, hey, you're my brother, we've been through all this stuff, but I believe in what this guy's saying. So I actually thought it was a film of two halves. When you look at the first half, is almost, it's all Black Panther, and you know, there's that wonderful James Bond-esque sort of action scene at the beginning in the jungles, and then again, we're in spoilers, so we can say this. It appears as though Black Panther dies, which, because of the nature of Infinity War, we knew was never going to happen. Yep. Let's be real. And being, you know, sort of the title character.
Actually, we saw him in the trailer.
Yeah,
exactly. Infinity Wars before
exactly.
The Black Panther would have film been started. Someone else in a Black Panther suit.
That's true.
Didn't know Killmonger much by then. So,
yeah. That's true.
That's right.
That's right. So, yeah, I think the first half is sort of Black Panther, and you don't actually see much of Killmonger. And then the back half is you get a bit of Killmonger's backstory, stuff with his father and why he is the way he is, and he eventually takes the throne, and then sure enough, you know, Black Panther shows up in deep into the third act and sort of resolves things from there. So I'll probably just go around the room. Any sort of favourite moments or scenes or anything that jumped out to people?
Yeah. So for me, and I had to call this out early, so... I now apologise if I pronounce this wrong. Aoki, played by Danny Gura from Michonne from The Walking Dead. I love the part where she puts on the wig for the casino, and she's just walking around, and she's like, "Oh, this wig is so horrible. Annoying." And instantly, I'm thinking Michonne from Walking Dead, because the whole time, because she is a bald-headed, you know, by nature.
In real life, she
doesn't have any hair, or very, very short.
And Michonne has the dreadlock.
And Michonne has this big dreadlock head of hair. So I instantly reflected.
Maybe it was a
reference. That was a bit of a pun intended to the Walking Dead, you know, because that's her most famous role. Yep. And she's been playing that for, what, 8 seasons now. So I love that. I just thought that was, yay.
And so she uses the hair as a weapon?
To a certain extent. But yeah, so I love that piece. I thought that was really funny. And totally got it. If that's what it was intended, because that's how I took it. So,
yeah. I thought the interactions between T'Challa and his sister were really, really good.
Yeah.
And even little moments where, you know, they're talking about Black Panther going to battle at the start, to basically free the girlfriend, from sort of the kidnappers. And they're talking about, you know, don't freeze, don't freeze. And then there's a point where he freezes, and they sort of give him a bit of lip about it after that. But it's done in such a beautiful sort of loving way, but they're also able to have a bit of fun with him, and he respects that, like Ben sort of said. He doesn't get angry and all high and mighty. So I thought some of those character moments were great. I loved the escape scene as well, where they break Claw out of the prison. He's getting interrogated, and the way they break him out, I thought, that was done with a real sort of oomph and you know, a lot of explosions, and I sort of really felt like I was there in that moment. And some very James Bond-esque scenes there in Korea,
which casino,
was quite topical with the Winter Olympics. But just sort of that slow build-up to what was really quite a brilliant sort of battle scene. I prefer sort of some of those more grounded sequences than towards the end of the film, as sort of is quite typical with Marvel films. We sort of get to a climax and there's a lot of CGI heavy stuff, where I start to kind of lose interest, because some of the physics or something about the scene sort of starts to disappear. And I found the final scene in the sort of train area a bit of a useless CGI. Like, it was sort of a lot of CGI for very little... It didn't really add a lot. Yeah, so there's a lot CGI heavy for what was it trying to... I can understand, you know, if we're talking something like Guardians, Volume 2, where you've got the CGI... You know, it was a CGI-heavy finale scene as well, but it kind of needed to be because of where they positioned the characters and where they were in that.
Yep.
Whereas this was sort of... Could they have done it without so much CGI?
Yeah, in essence, it was two blokes punching on, really, and they didn't need... I kind of knew... they telegraphed that quite early in the film, when they're, what's that train? And what do those things do? They stop vibranium from working, essentially, and you go, all right, that's going to come back around. You don't drop something like that deliberately. So, I tend to agree. The only real bit from a CG point of view that took me out of the film was that... falling into the giant mine shaft, and there's the two of them punching in midair, and you go, come on guys, it's not Dragon Ball Z. Like, that's the physics of that threw me. But yeah, I sort of jumped the queue. Trent, you anything else?
I think that was it for my highlights.
Darren,
For me, I really liked finding out more about is it T'Challa. Sorry, my apologies. T'Challa's father. I thought they really unpacked that really well, linked in obviously very well to Civil War, but he was a character that really in Civil War you have no idea about the grade of this character, and I thought they really fleshed him out really well. That to me was a real highlight of the film. It gave some context to a number of other characters' situations in the film as well, but it just added some weight to his character within the whole MCU, I thought. And I really, like others have said, I really, really loved the relationship between brother and sister, but I also liked her as a character as well, and I really want to see more of her in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That were probably some of my biggest highlights. As I said before, some of the scenery and the cinematography of that film really... You took my breath away, to be honest with you. And seeing it, I guess, on the we have a thing at Hoyt, or Hoyt's has a thing called the extreme screen. Seeing that on the extreme screen and that grandeur to it really, really added something to it, I thought. So that were probably the big highlights for me. The other one were the post credit scenes, which obviously really set up Infinity War really, really, really nicely, and it's got me even more psyched and. For that film, which is just really around the corner. I can't believe how close these two are.
Yeah. Well, we just put a thing up on the Toy Power page today. 50 days until Infinity War.
I know. I reacted to that on there, actually.
And that's everywhere now, because Marvel have moved up the American release date to be in line with everyone else rather than sort of a week or so behind. So just on the... Ben.
Can I just on things that I enjoyed, into that, Killmonger, I loved his sort of tribal mask that he wears right at the start of the film. I wanted to see more of that later on, but they sadly didn't. But that mask was so cool. Really like that. And also, I just want to talk about the overall tribe. What's their tribe's name? Sorry. The Wakanda tribe, like they're so set in tradition with their, you know, their rituals of who has the black, you know, who is the Black Panther, their processing of the herbs and things like that. You can see how they've had so much power underneath them, and yet stayed calm and no wars and no, you know, insight into let's take over the world, because their rituals and their traditions are so strong. That's how they've, you know, continued peacefully unaffected by the rest of the world. And I think that's something that you know not to be skipped over, so to speak.
I did forget one thing, which was again an absolute standout, and that was the soundtrack. A lot of songs by Kendrick Lamar, and there was some really, really nice tunes, I think, that really gave it that theme as well.
There was something Ben said that I was going to follow up on, and I've completely forgotten.
Killmonger's helmet or
mask.
mask.
Yeah, what was interesting with the one of the, and I won't say the word complaint is probably not right, but where people said it was a little hard to identify which Black Panther, when Black Panther was fighting Killmonger in the suit, the two guys that dress very similar. One of the things that I thought was kind of cool with that is they telegraphed that a bit early, where Shuri is showing him the different suits and say, oh, this one and this one, and he looks at the gold one that becomes Killmonger's in the end. He goes, oh, that's a bit gaudy, isn't it? Like, he immediately is not drawn to that one. So that was a nice little thing. The Killmonger suit, as far as his look in the comics, was very, I want to say, like Kraven the Hunter style. Very sort of like jungle warrior, but with a wicked looking like silver pointed mask, along the lines of sort of the Court of Owls, but with an angrier looking cool face. So I think that tribal mask was a bit of a throw to that. With that, it sort of leads me into like some of the deeper themes of it, and even just that bit where he's in the museum and he's all calm, and you go, you know, something's going to happen, right? And he's looking at the mask, and I was just waiting for him to just smash the glass and take it. And he goes, no, I'm just going to take this. And the museum curator's like, but you can't do that. And he's like, oh, well, hang on. Did you pay for it when you stole it from the tribes of Africa, kind of thing? And it's just that you could see that moment where she was just genuinely taken aback by it. And that was Killmonger's whole thing, was this, that my people have been downtrodden this entire time, and you don't care, so I'm gonna hit back, basically. And you understood what he was saying, but when he eventually sort of ascends the throne and gets rid of T'Challa, his answer to the violence and oppression that's happened to his people is to do that back in return. And that's where you sort of go, all right, now you're a villain type thing. But
that's the contrast between the two main characters.
Correct. Yeah, I think T'Challa and Killmonger are two sides of the same coin, kind of thing. They both want to do the right thing by their people. And you know, it's the contrasting ways in how they go about it is what makes it such a fascinating duel, really. Darren, you mentioned about the post-credit scenes.
I did, and one of them particularly, one caught my eye. There's quite a few memes about it that you've probably seen around the place. But yeah, looks like Bucky's back in Infinity War. Who would have guessed?
Yeah. Yeah, the White Wolf, which is what the children in that scene actually call him, that is some sort of reference to a very obscure Marvel character. I knew nothing about it, but just sort of saw the articles pop up. It's debatable whether that's going to become Bucky's new alter ego, or whether he's just, I don't think he really wants to have the monkey of the Winter Soldier anymore, and the connotations that go with that. So that'd be interesting. The post-credit scene of T'Challa talking at the UN, that kind of struck me. My wife made the point. She goes, I like post-credit scenes when they're fun. You know, you think back to Thor Ragnarok, when you get Jeff Goldblum, who's, you know, obviously fallen from his tower, and he's just like, oh, hey, Aunt Revolution's great. Yay. You know,
it's a draw.
Exactly. That's funny. It doesn't have a big impact on anything. But that scene at the UN, yeah, where he basically comes out and says, we are Wakanda, we're going to help you, you know, this is what we can do, kind of thing. That's a pivotal scene, and you kind of wonder. I had people, and again, it happens in every session you go to, people just walk out.
Yeah.
And people having not seen that scene, you could almost argue, could turn around and go, well, what was the point of that whole movie? Because nothing changed. You don't see that change pre that post-credit scene. It's a beautiful scene, but I think it should have happened earlier in the movie.
Definitely. If I could change anything in that movie, absolutely anything, I'd take that post-credit scene from after the credits, after the two, 3 minutes of sitting there, if probably longer, and I'd just slap it right at the end of the film and then have, just the Winter Soldier as a post-credit scene. Because if you walked out and didn't see the Winter Soldier thing, you probably wouldn't blink an eye.
It would on the change. Yeah.
But without seeing that UN thing, that's sort of like the icing on the cake. That resolves the movie and makes you feel better about the overall, you know, story and things. Mm. And that wasn't really, it's like, you know, let's flip it back to a toy scenario. So we live in Australia. We can't all get to San Diego Comic-Con because it's, you know, other side of the world. So if we miss out on a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive toy, it hurts because, you know, it's annoying because I wanted that. But the ideal San Diego Comic-Con toy is, here's a toy for people that, you know, attend the event, like a let's say a silver version of Leonardo, that and everyone else in the world who can't attend, it's like, oh well, I missed out on the silver Leonardo. It's not gonna complete my line, but I'm not gonna cry because I don't have it. You know, and that, and you know, with the film thing, it just finished the story. I just can't. I don't know why they had it as a post, you know, credit screen. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice. Because I would have had it at the end of the film too, and I actually had forgotten until you mentioned it that it wasn't, because I guess that's where I thought it should naturally fall.
Well, when you said scenes, I thought there was only one, wasn't there?
Yeah,
and that to was, that point.
It feels like a natural extension of the film. One of the, and I'm not going to call it a plot hole, but one of the questions I had coming out of it, when Killmonger, you know, ascends to the throne, one of the first things he does is burns the garden of the purple, is it heart-shaped flower or something?
Herb or whatever.
Yeah, that basically, in essence, gives Black Panther his extra abilities. And, of course, Nakia, I think it is, sneaks in and steals one that helps restore T'Challa, etc. So then the natural question from that is, well, is he quite literally the last Black Panther ever? You know, if he needs to take this, and it's not made clear in the film that, okay, you take it and 6 months' time it wears off, but there's obviously clearly when they go through the ritual combat for fighting, they remove it, and then so the winner takes the powers back. So if the garden's gone, is he the last in the line? Like,
with the extra power, I suspect.
Yeah.
But with comic books, they'll just say, oh, look, here's another secret garden. You know, it's easily written back in.
Did we mention this one?
Yeah.
Or someone will have a little pot, you know, in their, you know, next to their
baby Groot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so...
But it's a very good point, Frank. I hadn't thought of that aspect, but I'm sure from a Marvel point of view, it's and a, you know, director or writer's point of view, they can easily write it back in, so...
Yeah. Well, what do we take, as we are the Toy Power podcast, has anyone seen any Black Panther toys or merchandise or anything that sort of jumps out at them?
Yeah, well, I've seen quite a bit, which is good, and it's always good to see toys on the shelves, first and foremost, in Australia, and... It was about a month ago, I reckon, I saw the first Black Panther product. They had an end cap in the Maya City store, which was the, I guess, the more kid-friendly 6-inch figures, which considered, I think, consisted of Black Panther, T'Challa, Killmonger, and the girlfriend.
Ayoki? Oh, Nakia. She had like the Tron-style discs as the weapons in the last scene.
So, yeah.
Yep.
But the other thing that's been floating around more recently is the Marvel Legends wave, which has the Build-A-Figure as well. And I think, I don't know if I've got this right, but the face, because Black Panther obviously came with the unmasked T'Challa head, and it looked just spot on. Yep. So I wonder if this is sort of the first of that face print technology we're seeing on some of the characters. But they looked really, really nice.
Yeah. I've got that Black Panther figure, and I was just... sort of moving stuff around just yesterday, actually, and I was really debating, you go, which head do you put him with, because both of them just look amazing. It comes with the Build-A-Figure of Aoki, so the captain of the Royal Guard, basically, and I think that's a great choice in a wave where you could have had so many different options to choose from. I think they've gone with the right one there. Look, I've seen a lot of the sort of the role play cosplay type stuff where you've got the mask that's got sound effects built in, you know, the little claws that kids can, you know, wear and this sort of thing, which sort of lends itself to that, particularly as we're still a while away, but when we get to Halloween, particularly in America... It's sort of one of the questions I've heard on a few other podcasts is where they talk about, is it okay for a white kid to dress up as the Black Panther? I have some thoughts on that. I wonder if anyone else here has given any sort of thought to that, or
I think we're looking personally. I think we're looking too far into it. Like,
yeah,
I mean, my girls dress up as boys characters all the time. You know, they jump between girl characters and boy characters. I think, you know, in today's age, you should just overlook that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, not to say the wrong thing here, but I'm sure darker skinned kids wear white superhero characters, you know, costumes as well. So, you know, I just, I, I, yeah, write that off straight away, in my opinion.
That's fair.
I'd be very happy for my son, you know, to watch Black Panther and say, I want to be like Black Panther. You know, I respect the character. I like the character. I want to dress up as the character. And I think that's, for kids, they're not thinking about it deeply. They just like characters and they just want to play their favorite characters. So I say, let the kids dress up whoever they want. And, you know, it's another sale and it's another, you know, good thing. And I think having more diversity is a really good thing. You know, it gives people chances to connect with characters they feel connected with. So, you know, a lot of people say it's sort of, you know, it's great to see, you know, a black person in a lead superhero role. And I think, you know, the fact that we had a black director, we had a predominantly black cast, all these, you know, black musicians working on it, that's brilliant. I can't remember where I was going with this, but but I think that diversity is just what makes things really great.
Yep.
That there are role models for kids to, you know, want to be like, and that's a great thing.
I'm going to say this with the obvious disclaimer that Frank's already pointed out. You know, I'm a white male, so I have the whole white male privilege thing, so I acknowledge all of that. But I'd like to think that we could reach a point as a society where we don't judge people on their culture. And I'd like to also think, and again, if I'm speaking out of turn, I do apologise, but I feel that age, we're talking about children who haven't learnt about discrimination, oppression, hatred, bigotry, any of that sort of stuff. So I think it comes from a much nicer place than if someone just smeared like body paint on themselves. Yep. and were totally disrespectful in that regard. So I don't see it as in any way a derogatory thing. If anything, it's coming from a point of view of admiration and respect and celebration rather than anything. And as I said, we're talking about children who haven't learnt, you know, the horrors of the world around bigotry and hatred and that. So I don't think it would be coming from a nasty place.
Can I just jump in? I heard a quote a while ago. I can't call them out. But they said, you're not born racist, you're taught to be racist.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, look, I agree with everything you guys have said. And I look at it as, you know, because the counter argument to it all is that you get some African American people who would look at a white child who's dressed up like that and go, you can't do that because he's our superhero. And I sit there and go, you know what? That sort of door should swing both ways, because if you see a kid dressed up as an African American or a dark skinned person dressed up as Batman, you don't sit there and go, you can't do that. You know, that's cool to see. And I think that door needs to swing both ways. And I really hope it does. I agree with everything you guys said about it. I was just sort of putting it out there because whilst it's sort of, there's nothing about it now, once we get to Halloween, you can almost bet your bottom dollar you're going to see something on the internet about it. So yeah, let's open, hope it doesn't.
But. Yeah, and I'm open to hearing the other point of view, particularly if it's done in a respectful manner. I'm totally open to hearing the other point of view as to why people might feel it's wrong. So I'm not trying to shut people down when I say that. I just feel that, you know, children generally speaking, they don't have that racism. Correct, as Ben said, you know, it's not born to us. It's unfortunately something that, you know, society teaches people as they go through life. So I don't think it'd be coming from a nasty place if a child said they want to dress up as Black Panther. It's respect, admiration for the character, and celebration of the character. And I think it's just terrific that you know, we have such a diverse range of superheroes and that we're becoming the kind of society where, you know, and I've just forgotten the actor's name, but he was in Scream, and you know, his son dressed up as Harley Quinn for Comic-Con. I mean, you know, when we live in an era where we celebrate that diversity now.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm not trying to compare apples with oranges and say they're the same things, but you know what I'm trying to say is, you know, we live in a world now where, you know, and particularly in geek culture, where we celebrate difference and diversity, and it's seen as a strength, not as a limitation or as a way of holding people back. We celebrate diversity.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just before we wrap, probably what I hope to be a very small segment. Any sort of negatives? Anything that people didn't like about the film? Anything that sort of was not great?
if I had to call out anything, and I sort of mentioned it a little bit before, just for a comic book-esque movie that was sort of what you perceive to be a bit of action-based film, I don't think there was enough action. Don't get me wrong, the storyline was fantastic. The adventure of Attilia and, you know, Black Panther and everyone was fantastic. But there was only a couple of really standout action scenes, and it was just a lot of dialogue. Not boring dialogue, yeah, by any means,
yep,
but I just didn't feel there was, you know, more than two or three, maybe two or three action scenes throughout the whole film, and there was only one really long stretch, one which the car chase, which was amazing in itself. But just action could have been a bit amped up a little bit more, if anything at all. But yeah, overall, that's a nitpick, I'd say.
For me, I found it hard to understand one thing that happened in the story, and maybe I just sort of missed it, but essentially, in one of the opening scenes, we see T'Challa ascend the throne, and basically they've got the other tribes, and the other tribes are able to basically challenge for the throne. And one of the other tribes, sort of the gorilla tribe, the ones that have been banished almost to the mountains, they challenge and they lose, and it sort of sets up the whole challenge sequence. Then I guess when Killmonger comes into the fray, because he does have the tattoo and he is, you know, born to the king's brother, so he is a rightful Wakandan, he is able to challenge. I just couldn't understand then the requirement for T'Challa to actually accept the challenge, and it was almost like the way I interpreted the story, he did that, he didn't have to, there was no requirement, because there was no requirement to accept the challenge, but he did it to kind of prove something. And I'm a big Game of Thrones fan, and when I think to Game of Thrones, a lot of the characters, you know, even if they are good characters, they'll act or they'll behave in a way that provides the best result for everyone. And we talked about, for all his decision making and all his wiseness and calculated, he did all the things to benefit his people. Therefore, if he didn't need to accept the challenge, it was a very strange thing to do, because he put his whole people in great peril by doing it, and then essentially losing to Eric for that moment. Now, he came back and all that, but I would have thought you just decline it. You know, he's one guy.
It's a risk you don't need to take.
It's a risk you don't need to take as king. And I think if anyone can challenge kind of at any time, well, you're a monarch, you basically get rid of that rule. That rule shouldn't exist.
Mm.
And therefore, the only other thing is, if you can challenge and then you basically as king have to accept or deny, why did he accept the challenge?
Well, because if you're the king, why would you ever accept any challenge? You go, no, I'm good.
Well, that's what I mean, and I get that, but I would have thought, if you actually think about logic of being a ruler, what's the first thing rulers do? They make the rules that keep them in power. And a lot of the stuff they talk about, you know, the father says to the son, one day you'll be king, and it sets it up like a true monarchy. But then you go, well, maybe not. You might not be king, because you might be challenged and you might lose the kingdom in the blink of a heartbeat. So I just didn't get the logic of the challenge sequence. And if you make it work from a story point of view, why did he accept the challenge, being the level-headed kind of guy he was? That bit just didn't make sense to me from a plot point of view.
I suppose he accepted the challenge because he could see his people dividing between his point of view, the king's point of view, Black Panther's point of view, and he could see the other half dividing down, or maybe Killmonger is right, you know, and Black Panther, being the level-headed person that he is, he's like, well, I want everyone on my side, so I need to be the better man here and challenge him so that I can win everyone's...
Yeah, we need to settle this now.
I get that, but wouldn't you then kind of maybe bring him into the fold and say, well, let's have you on the council because you've got some good things to offer? Like, it seems like a pretty extreme step to basically go bet it all on... You know, it's like betting the whole kingdom,
betting the house,
without the other guy having any ante at all. He came to the table with basically not nothing, but he did have some support. And you're quite right, Ben, from that point of view. But it's sort of, when I go into a film like this, I probably critique it like I critique, you know, other films that I probably shouldn't. I shouldn't bring that same level of analysis to a comic book film, because you just got to let some of that stuff go. Yeah, and if you analyze it too much, it becomes a bit silly.
Yeah.
But that's really the only thing. And then, like I said, probably the use of CGI towards the end. I was really hyped by the rhinos, but they just were sort of like a bit of a bit of a nothing CGI kind of rhino. Yeah. So that was just a little bit disappointing in that final sequence.
Darren?
I was actually pretty happy with it. Maybe I'm not quite hard enough on these films, I don't know. But yeah, I was actually pretty happy with it for what it was. I went in with no preconceived notions because I knew nothing about the source material. So my expectations were I guess, not really anywhere. They weren't high or low. They were just like, I know nothing about this, so, you know, win me over. And it kind of did. You know, in fact, it did. So there wasn't really anything about it, and I sort of expected or hoped it would be different from a lot of the other Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff, because I figure, you know, as you said, you know, we're 18 films in. Mm. You don't want them to all sit with the same prescribed formula every time. So I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, I can't really, other than, as Ben said, little nitpicks, I can't fault it. And there was that one bit of CGI I mentioned that sort of took me out of the film. But other than that, I was on the edge of my seat going, all right, give me more. Please don't let this end. Yeah, I think that's pretty much covered Black Panther pretty well, unless anyone else has got anything else they want to say. Oh, there is one sort of fan theory I've heard. As we know, obviously, Tony Stark is sort of, well, Robert Downey Jr., more to the point, is reaching the end of his tenure. And given the amazing reception that young Shuri has gotten, and that she's a bit of a tech genius, there is talk, and again, it's all fan speculation, nothing official from Marvel or anyone related, that they're saying, let's make her the new Iron Man. And as far as the comics, for those that don't know, that's semi-canon in that there was a period, and I think they're just, because Marvel are once again rebooting everything because that's what they seem to do, where for a period of time, Iron Man was in fact I think she was 15-year-old African-American girl. A completely different character, not related to Black Panther in any way, but given the amazing reception the film's had, you sort of go, I'd go see that.
I'd accept it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense for how they've developed that character. So, yeah.
Be good. Very, very interesting to see.
Good idea. Very good.
Watch this space.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that wraps our movie review. So, thanks very much for all your thoughts on that, and Frank for taking us through it. We thought we'd spend the last 10 minutes of the episode talking about our latest scores.
Whoa, dude. Nice score.
So, Darren, we might start with you, if you've got any toy-related pickups or finds that you've got on the table.
I have. I've got a few things, actually. So, a little while ago, I got the Justice League Multiverse Walmart exclusive, so the Batman and the Cyborg. They arrived. I also received the Hallmark Skeletor Christmas decoration, which I'm a huge fan of.
Just in time for Christmas?
Yes. That was just in time for Christmas, actually, but only by a few days. For people who wonder what on earth's Master of the Universe got to do with Christmas...
Stop listening.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's just say, at my most impressionable age, Christmas through 83 to 87, everything. Everything to do with Christmas.
Well, there was a special as well.
Absolutely. So. That's right. There was a He-Man and Sherry Christmas special, so... To me, very Christmassy. The other things I got were the He-Man and the Skeletor Master of the Universe Mega Construction figures. And
you did have to import those?
I did have to import those. Yeah. I'm currently looking for the Teela and Beastman. But yeah, I had to import those. And I recently also received the Soft-Headed Turtles figures from the Vintage Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles line. So the four Turtles, Splinter and Shredder.
Nice.
Very nice. Cool. Good stuff, Frank.
All right, and Rocksteady and Bebop. So they're as well. So yeah, the eight. Yeah.
Excellent. Look, for me, this period has been a while since we've done our latest scores. This has been pretty much all about Marvel Legends for me. The collection that was sort of, you know, about three or four figures is now easily tripled that. I got a bulk lot off of a friend of ours, Max Tibby, from the SA Toy Collectors group, including an original Toy Biz era Iron Man. I'm pretty sure he's even like Wave 1. Some stuff there. But I got characters like Doctor Strange, Iron Fist, Daredevil, Shatterstar. Also recently picked up the Toys R Us 2-pack of Cyclops and Dark Phoenix, which looks really, really good. Dark Phoenix comes with the alternate heads, so you can have it with the fiery eyes or the normal sort of Jean Grey looking face. Also picked up Hela as well, which again comes with a Kate Blanchett head with, you were talking about the face printing technology, it's her.
Yeah.
Like, it looks amazingly lifelike. Also, picked up the Combiner Wars Trypticon.
Oh, nice.
Massive thing that it is. Still haven't been game to put the stickers on that because I need to find a spare 2 days to do it.
Or a bin.
Or a bin.
Sticker master.
But yeah, that's pretty much me. Marvel Legends.
Nice.
Sick, man. Sounds cool. Well, during the recording of this...
he's done it again.
Not again.
No, I haven't bought anything. Oh, I'm sorry. I lie. So our mate, Oliver Jones, shout out to you, mate, from the UK, a.k.a. I Make Toys on Instagram. He's he sent me a picture saying, this little fella is on his way to Australia. Hope you like it. At Shredder 1982. And it's the Raphael, the black and white custom beautiful. Raphael
nice.
That he's been working on.
So
and
good.
And he sent me a message the other day saying if I want little eyelets on his belt so he can hold his size. And I said, hell yeah. So I can just
it's being made literally for you. That's this right, is like a custom
right.
So for
it's
you.
One of a kind, basically.
I think he makes about 15 of each variety. He makes a movie version, a sort of cartoon version. So they're different skin color tones.
Yep. Yeah.
And then the black and white one. And I figured I don't have any black and white turtles except for the pop vinyls that my wife customized for me. So I figured if I'm going to get one, I want to get the black and white.
Nice.
Thank you so much, Oliver. Check him out on Instagram. I Make Toys, as in the body part. The body part, that's right. I can't wait to have it in hand, and I'll do a little bit of a review on the show thanking you. So, wicked. Another thing I picked up today was the DC Super Heroes Justice League Lego set, the Superman and Crypto team up against Lobo set. So I picked that up today. Another one I picked up recently on the weekend was a vintage Voltron board game that was practically complete, and the art on it is just absolutely gorgeous. Was worth every cent, and I didn't pay very much for it. I got a Next Mutations loose Shredder figure for a Swan song, cool. Which was really cool, and I armed him up. He came without any weapons, so I armed him up with a nice looking sword, and he looks wicked. As well as some freebies from our good mate, Mr. Davey Damaged. He hooked me up with a Shredder from fig from the TMNT film from 2007, and he actually didn't even appear in the film itself.
No.
Davey also gave me a little vinyl Shredder figure, so such a generous guy. Can't thank you enough, Davey. They've found their unique spot in my toy collection. Thank you again. I also... not long ago, picked up a mint in sealed box Super Devil Shredder from the vintage Playmates Ninja Turtle line. So that I think I'm up to 10 Shredders now from the Playmates line. I think I've got about 3 left.
Yeah.
Very Japanese style, and the figure transforms into a winged dragon. Didn't last very long in sealed box when I got it into my hands. I cracked it open and took him out for the first time and breathed in all that vintage 1997 air, I think it was about that. last but not least, a bunch of weapons and a figure from my slowly growing Remco Beast Warriors toy line that I actually did a trade with a guy on Instagram known as KO Motu 1980. It's the second time we've traded, and we're both very happy with our deals. Said weapons included the bow and dagger for Skullman, so if anyone's a Skullman fan, you can appreciate how hard those weapons are to find. As well as the greenish yellow variant of the Gecko figure. So some awesome scores I've picked up recently.
Cool. Very good. I've been collecting Star Trek mint on card, and I did an order that rounded out, for the most part, my mint on card collection. I won't bore you with the detail of the different figures. I'll mention a few notable shout-outs.
Itemized, alphabetical order.
I've got a list in my phone. But I got the Tom Paris figure from Voyager, which has a Masters of the Universe reference, for those of you who know the film, Kevin, from the Masters of the Universe 87 film. So that was cool to kind of have that representation.
Does it look anything like him? Because we're talking very much pre-face-printing technology.
There's no face print. If you had the figure in your hand, you wouldn't think it was an actor.
I have actually seen the figure. Yeah. So yeah.
But very cool. The mint-on-card version obviously comes with a photograph of Neil... what's his name?
Robert Duncan McNeil.
So it's great to have that, you know, representing the character, which is really cool. And I rounded out big fan of Star Trek Generations, the film. And so I pretty much rounded out that little subline. I needed a few of the sort of vintage Star Trek crew, Scotty and Chekhov and a few things like that. But I guess just the experience of this order was because I'd been collecting Star Trek for, well, I won't say a while, but I'd got my collection up to a point by buying quite big lots. So going online, just going, yeah, I'll buy that lot for, you know, a lot of 30 figures and that lot of 30 figures. So I got to the point where I just couldn't buy lots anymore because I needed those last few and they were from different eras. And I found a guy on eBay and sort of had a lot of banter with him as I was trying to put together this order. And I was saying, you know, I need this, you know, put it in my cart and bought it. And then he's like, oh, by the way, I've got these figures. Yeah, do you want to see those? And yep. It was really great. And then he goes, oh, you know, you've paid too much on shipping, so I'll refund you that. And what the hell, you can have a 20% discount on everything you've bought. And then he's like, oh, by the way, these Generations figures, they're a bit scuffed. So, you know, I got him out of it because he had multiple of each figures. You know, could buy three of, well, he must have had a massive collection. And he goes, you know, look, sorry, they're a bit scuffed and all that. And I'm like, oh, well, that's okay. You know, I got a good deal. I got the refund. And I got them. And they just had the tiniest scuff mark. Everything just came in the most immaculate condition.
Nice.
So it was just such a good experience. Like, just packed everything well.
On eBay, no less.
Yep, went bent over backwards.
Can you give him a shout out if you know his name? Or?
I don't know it off the top of my head. It's
Trent's got to go reaching for his phone here.
Just, I mean, you know, might as well.
Absolutely.
If, you know, just in case other playmates, or even if he's selling other items, you know, promote when someone's really good. ISO. Mm.
Yeah. Even if he's not, it's just a nice way of saying thank you.
Yeah, it's a positive, you know, experience. You know, all too often you hear a lot of the negative stories with eBay and, you know, some of the horror stories. It's nice to hear something the other side of that coin.
People are pretty quick to remember the bad situations and stories and forget all the amazing ones.
Have we stalled enough time for Trent yet, do you think?
I've done something to my phone, so I can't actually bring it up right now.
We might add it into the comments
but
later.
Yeah. Okay. But awesome. And he does deserve a shout-out. Like, and I sort of compartmentalised my Star Trek collection, and there's a line, basically, it gets into what they call the Warp Factor series. And they go and they do a lot of repaints and re-release figures. And it's on a totally different card going forward. The card's a different shape and it's got different printing and everything. And I sort of said, I won't go down the Warp Factor series. But he had a lot of stuff on there from Warp Factor. And I'm like, how deep does a rabbit hole go? If I'm going to go into that, I know where to start looking at it. And it's interesting because there's sets on... you know, there's Voyager, there's Deep Space Nine, there's every sort of... television subline, but you get into it, and then they obviously do movie versions of figures. But in the main line, until you get into that Warp Factor, you can't get a Borg Queen, and you can't get Seven of Nine. Oh. So they did those figures very late in the piece, and so they're two that I'm sort of after as my next step. But it's been a really fun line to collect, and just sort of reinvigorated my vintage collecting. So it's been good.
Cool.
All right, well, that probably will wrap for another episode of Toy Power. We thank you so much for tuning in, and if you've got any comments, feel free to shout out and hit us up on the Toy Power Facebook page. You can also check out the website. We're on the Giant Size Team Up Network website. And a couple of other new shows hitting the Giant Size Team Up. We've got Geek Versus, which is a really great show. They did a Oscar episode where I think they sort of talked about all the Oscar films, but maybe not in the way you'd expect. Check out Giant Size Team Up for some other great shows. Always fun and always lots of great stuff to digest in that space.
Yeah, we've also now put ourselves on Patreon, which for those who want to try and support the show by throwing us a little bit of loose change, if you go to patreon.com/toypowerpodcast, we've got some stuff there. If you know, we've got some exclusive rewards for those extra generous people. It's not going to impact on how we do the show and stuff. You'll still get your weekly dose of us each and every week
for free.
Exactly. So, but yeah, for those who are willing to go the extra mile, we've got some exclusive goodies for you there as well.
Unless you want to pay us a lot to stay away.
Oh, look, if you want to pay us to do this as our job, then by all means, let's do that.
No, I was saying they might want to pay us to not go on
the air.
Can we offer that service? Maybe the money. This is Toy Power. Toy Power's gone.
P-O-W-U-R.
So it's no longer a good journey until next time. It's a good journey forever because we've just all been made millionaires. So on that note, until next time, good journey, everyone.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but...